Greetings in the name of Jesus Christ. Appreciate that devotional this evening. Very inspirational. I had one question. When do we really begin to realize heavenly citizenship? Is that future tense or is that going to be happening now? Okay. Brother Leo said he was working on it. And I realized that was a way to introduce it to your customer. But I believe that we are citizens now. And it will make a difference of what we are mindful of. May turn in your song books, the Christian hymnals, to number 193. I'd like to sing that. If our song leader give us the key of B-flat, I'd appreciate that. Our topic tonight is, what does God expect of Christians in America? B-flat.
Brightly beamed our Father's mercy from His light, house evermore. But to us He gives the keeping of the lights along the shore. Let the love where lights be burning send the gleam across the way. Some poor fainting, struggling seaman, you may rescue, you may save. Dark the night of sin has settled, let the angry billows roar. Eager eyes are watching, longing for the lights along the shore. Let the love where lights be burning send a gleam across the way. Some poor fainting, struggling seaman, you may rescue, you may save. Trim your feet, O lamps, my brother, some poor sailor tempest-tossed, trying now to make the harbor in the darkness may be lost. Let the love where lights be burning send a gleam across the way. Some poor fainting, struggling seaman, you may rescue, you may save.
My father-in-law worked at Deardorff's Excavating. I think it was located in Chambersburg. This goes back probably 40 years ago. I remember him telling the account of a new employee that arrived on the job. They were working at another job close by, and the foreman came to their job first, and they looked down at the other job where the man was to be backfilling a house. And the foreman says, "What's that fellow doing down there?" He was kind of a sputtery type of a fellow. They said, "Well, that was the new fellow you hired." "What?" And he jumps in his truck and he drives down there, and the man was down there with the dozer and his blade about a foot off the ground, just driving around the house. Driving around the house. Later they discovered that this man wanted a job, and he came in and he applied for the job, and he lied on his application. He said he knew how to drive a dozer, never drove one in his life. And they put him on the job to backfill a house. Can you imagine what would have happened if he would have started pushing dirt? The project would have probably fell in upon itself. But he wanted a job, and he was desperate for a job. And he pled with the foreman. He said, "I lied to you," but he said, "I needed a job." He said, "I got a wife. I got a family at home. I need to provide for them. I'll do anything you want me to do if you'll just give me a job." And the foreman was merciful to him. They put him out beside one of those drillers, you know, at the road where they stand there and they drill all day long. And he actually turned out to be a very good employee. He was, I think he stayed there about 8 years. Turned out as a good employee because somebody showed him mercy. Now, what do you think that man's thoughts were when he got up in the morning and he went off to work? What do you think his thoughts were toward his employer? I really think because of the fact that he stuck with the job and he wanted a job, that there was a spirit of admiration and appreciation that somebody showed him mercy. I invite your attention this evening to Romans chapter 11. And as we think about our responsibility before God, what do you think of God this evening? What's your impression of God? You know, the Deerdorf Excavating Company did not really need that employee. In a sense, they did. But they had all the reason in the world to tell him, we don't trust you. Move along. Does God need you tonight? He doesn't. Sorry to disappoint you. God does not need you tonight. But God in his mercy says, I am going to give you an opportunity to prove your worth, to prove that you can do something constructive. So what's your attitude toward God tonight? One man recently said that he was sitting with a bishop once that man had asked for church membership. And the bishop looked at him and said, and why do you want to be a member of this congregation? And the man looked at him and said, because they need me here. He said the bishop was a man of few words, and he went, really? Really? But you know, there's a lot of people who have that same attitude toward God. God needs me. Really? We need God. And that changes our whole perspective of what our purpose and calling and life is all about. When I know that I need God, I start to look at God in a completely different way. I start to look at God as somebody who has been merciful to me because I lied on my resume. I look at God as one who is going to meet my needs and supply my needs, and I'm not sufficient in myself. Romans chapter 11, the latter part here. The Apostle Paul was a man who knew God. And if we're going to be of any value in the American society today, we have to have a vision of God. And as that vision of God takes a hold of our hearts and our lives, it needs to radiate out from that. Verse 33, oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. When was the last time you had thoughts about God like that? Last time you had thoughts about the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and the knowledge of God. For who hath known the mind of the Lord? Or who hath been his counselor? Or who hath first given to him, and it shall be recompensed unto him again? For of him, and through him, and to him are all things, to whom be glory forever. Amen. A lot of people who call themselves Christians today who have never comprehended this kind of a vision of God. Never comprehended that. Then we wonder why we are so ineffective in our society today. Scriptures say that if we are going to teach and to preach, we need to first feed ourselves. And probably all of us at some time or another tried to feed without having taken it in sufficiently. And when you were done, you felt Nobody got anything. We left that in the hands of the Lord. But we need to feed ourselves. So it is, when we can grasp, just in a portion, the greatness of God. If we go back to verse 31, I'm taking this up. The context is in reaching Israel. Even so have these also have not believed that through whose mercy they also may obtain mercy. Whose mercy does it say? Somebody. Your mercy. That's you. That's me. That's every person who has experienced the mercy of God. He says, I'm making you responsible to be a conduit of the mercy you have received to others, that they also may receive mercy from God. I can't give mercy to them, but in my reaching out to them, I can direct them to the giver of mercy. Did you think about that? Have you ever met somebody and wrote them off the first time you saw them? We do that, don't we? Look at them and say, they'll never make a Mennonite. What kind of mercy is that? Maybe the foreman of Deerdorf would have said, you lied to me, you're history, you're out of here. But there was a man who was willing to extend mercy. The same is true for you and I. When we meet somebody, we need to be ready to extend mercy to them. Just remember, you at one time in your life was at the same place they are. Maybe worse. Maybe worse. Because we have been ingrained or taught the way of truth. And these people have never even come into connection with it. And so we have some advantages that they don't have. So what is mercy this evening? If Brother Tim owes me $1,000, you go to Matthew chapter 18. Talks about the man who was owed a big sum of money, and he said, you owe me. And the man said, give me time, I will repay you. And he said, I'm going to just forgive the debt. But he goes out and he finds his fellow man that owed him some money, and he took him by the throat and said, you are going to pay me every cent, and I'm going to cast you into prison until you do it. Mercy is the ability for one to release another from his obligation. So if Brother Tim owes me $1,000 and I come to him and I say, you're going to pay me. Or I can extend mercy and say, you don't have to pay. Or I'll give you time to pay. It's my ability to give to another an opportunity. And I want you to think about mercy in light of opportunity. The Lord's what are new every morning? Somebody. Mercies. So what do you think about when you think about the Lord's mercy being new every morning when you wake up? We'll give you this to think about. The Lord's opportunities. You see, the man who forgave that debt gave that man another opportunity. That's mercy. So the Lord's opportunities are new every morning. Do you wake up to a world of opportunity? Or do you wake up, oh my goodness, there, this whole stack of clothes that need to be washed today, and all the ironing and all the cleaning, and this is depressing. And you men go to the job and you say, this guy owes me money and that guy owes me money, and I'm not sure how I'm going to pay my bills. Opportunities. You say, is that an opportunity? Doesn't feel that way, does it? But if the Lord's opportunities are new every morning, we have to broaden our horizons a little bit. It's back to what Brother Leo had in his devotional. Where do we belong, really? Where is our citizenship? What is our mindful of? And I always like Hebrews chapter 11 where it says, had they been mindful of. It simply means that their mind had been full, like the ones who came out of Egypt who said, oh, those leeks and garlics, if only we could have those. What's your mind full of? The thing that your mind is full of is the thing that you will pursue in life. And if your mind is full of depressing thoughts, you'll pursue depression. You really will. If your mind is full of opportunities, that God has given me an opportunity to serve my family by washing their clothes, you will do it with joy rather than because you have to do it. And I realize, in reality, sometimes there's some things we do because we have to. We are still in the flesh. But we do. You sisters, serve your husbands because you love them, you love your families. And some of the boring things that go along with it is part of life. It's part of the marriage vow, actually. Brother, you go to work to earn a living, to pay your bills, and provide for your family. It's part of your marriage vow. God's opportunities are new every morning. And we don't have to go to some foreign country to find that opportunity. We can find it right in our own homes, right with our own families. And then as it happens in our families, it extends itself beyond that to those that we come into contact every day. And one of the things that has always amazed me is the story of the rich man and Lazarus. Did you ever stop to think how often the rich man saw Lazarus? Where was Lazarus lying? Somebody tell me. At his doorstep. You walk out your door tomorrow morning, you better be looking around. Do you realize that God placed Lazarus at that rich man's doorstep for a purpose? He said, here's a man who has the ability to distribute. Here's a man who has the ability to help somebody else. Here's a man who had the ability to accumulate in life, and that's not a sin. The sin was that he was not willing to help the man that God put at his doorstep. And I don't know who God is going to put at your doorstep tomorrow morning. Are you flexible enough to help that person? Or are you so wired and so geared about your citizenship here on earth that I don't have time for that person? He's going to interrupt my schedule. Dads, it's time to head off to work. And one of the children is giving mom a fit. Do you have time for that child that God put on your doorstep? Or do you go off to work and let it be mom's problem? And then you come back 15 years later and you say, this one dad and mom was talking, discussing their family, and said, where have we failed? Where have we failed? Dad went off to the job he was like clockwork. And the children were mom's problem. Dads, if you brought children in this world, those children are your problem too. Don't neglect it. And don't say it's all their fault. You bring them into this world, you're responsible. Now, I'd like to move on into chapter 12. Christian's responsibility in America, first of all, is to have a vision of God. Secondly, it's to have a vision of our purpose here in life. Now, I beseech you, brother, by the mercies of God. And he comes back to this thought of mercy. I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, don't think that what he's telling us to do here is something that you are going to do of your own power. But it is simply the mercies of God, the opportunity of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you might prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. There's a sequence here that is very, very important. A knowledge of God. A knowledge of our purpose of existence here in life. And what does he say that is? In verse 1. Somebody. A living sacrifice. What is that? Do you ever stop to try to think through what is a living sacrifice? How do I present my body as a living sacrifice? Now, if you go back into the Old Testament, you read about all the sacrifices they had. And you read about Isaac being taken up there and tied up and laid on the altar. And the knife ready to take his life. What is a living sacrifice to me? And I think sometimes we kind of we kind of skip over that. Yeah, we want to be the living sacrifice. And we beat it to verse 2 because be not conformed to this world. That's the important thing. That's the backbone of our belief system, that we're not conformed to this world. And we totally forget that verse 1 came before verse 2. And understanding the living sacrifice is more important than understanding the be not conformed, because the living sacrifice prepares us for nonconformity. So what's the living sacrifice tonight? I got a little demo along tonight. I hope I don't offend you by that. Anybody know what this thing is? Oh, tea can. Something's happening to this candle. What's happening to it, Tim?
Well, it's burning.
It's burning? Okay. What else is it doing? Being consumed? It's giving light. Anything else? Giving heat. All right. Living sacrifice. Another candle along here. Got all these at the dollar store. Now, if you want to go the cheap route, you use that one. That's also a tea candle. Put them on the table to make the table look nice. And they give you that feel. Now, here's what I want you to think about. This is also giving light, isn't it? What isn't it doing? Right? Stop being consumed. A little bit of energy in there, a little battery in there runs a little thing. Come, young man. Want to touch that thing? Just a little bit. What if I had you touch this thing? It'd probably burn you, wouldn't it? What kind of religion do you have this evening? This? Or this? Are we just saying, let the lower lights be burning? Now, here at 4th Avenue, is this the kind of lower light you have? Or is it this guy? Beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. This little candle has some advantages. First of all, I can make 1,000 of these and they'll all look alike. And they'll all have probably the same intensity of light. Right? There are church groups that like to do this. Because when I look at all these little lower lights, they're beautiful. They all look the same. We call it uniformity. All right? They all look alike. And the really neat thing about this thing is I can turn it on Sunday morning, and I can turn it off as soon as I leave the service, and I can stick it in my pocket, and nobody ever knows. Nobody ever knows. And I can go the rest of the week, and nobody ever knows. And Sunday morning, I get to church again, and I get my little light out, and I turn it on. Who would like to volunteer to come up and stick this in their pocket? You know what I can do with this one? I can light another fire. I can start a huge, I can burn this building down. All right? There is a warmth that goes with a living sacrifice. And when every person in this audience here this evening understands what a living sacrifice is all about, there is a warmth that you will feel when you come in these doors that you will never feel from benches full of these kind of things. All right? Is there any uniformity here? A little bit. All little round candles, all filled with the same thing. But you know what happens? There's going to be a variation of intensity of heat from that flame. And the older we get, the flame starts to dim down a little bit. The intensity of heat may not be there. But we're being consumed for what purpose? His purpose. We're okay with that. You know what happens too many times? And some of you older brethren, let's keep in mind, let's be willing to hand over to the next generation a responsibility. You don't have to be 100 years old to do that. You don't have to be 80. You don't have to be 70. You don't have to be 60. You don't have to be 50. Learn to start to delegate. Learn to incorporate the younger generation. Because your flame may go out before you thought it was going to go out. And has the next person been lit, ready to pick up and to go on with it? That's so important. We get worried about somebody's flame being brighter than ours. Let's go down here to verse 5. So, as we have many members in one body, and all members have not the same office, having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us. I want to tell you, the picture is the gifts differing according to the grace given to us means that some people's flames are going to be hotter and higher and larger than others. And I'm okay with that. Because you have a gift that I don't have, I'm all right with that. If I'm not, I'm a carnal man. And all I want to do is make everybody have all the same flame. And if you don't have a flame as big as my flame, you're not spiritual. That's carnality tonight. Whether prophecy, let us prophesy according to the proportion of faith. Or ministry, let us wait on our ministry. What that means? I like to think of ministering in the category of nursing. A nurse in the hospital is helping you do what you can't do for yourself. All right? The goal isn't to continue to keep you in that state, but to get you the place where you can take care of yourself. In our ministry, we miss the mark if we can't help people get to a place to help themselves. The problem with too much ministering is we want dependence so that we can feel like we have a ministry. I'm sorry, you missed the point. Let him wait on his ministry. Be out there nursing, encouraging people to grow and to come to a fullness that God wants them to have. There's nothing in it for you. If you're getting a kick out of it, you're in the wrong business. Or he that teacheth on teaching, or he that exhorteth on exhortation, he that giveth, let him do it with simplicity. He that ruleth with diligence, he that showeth mercy with what? Cheerfulness. I want you to think about that the next time you need to extend mercy to somebody. You know, when somebody owes you money, you can forgive them, but did you do it cheerfully? Sometimes we forgive them because it's too much pain to ask them the fifth and sixth time to pay. It's just easier to say, forget it. Now, can I do that cheerfully? In other words, I think if we're giving somebody another opportunity, there needs to be a motive behind that opportunity. I'm doing this to help that person, not because I'm too lazy to carry through with my responsibility. I say that myself. I have an individual that owes me some money right now. And I could choose to say, just forget it. But I know why I'm doing that. I'm doing that just because I don't feel like calling him again and asking him for payment. And I know that if I don't call him again, I just create a person who is that much more irresponsible. But I have to figure out how to be cheerful about it if I'm going to extend mercy. Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. Now, the context of what I just read there is that there is going to be differences in the intensity of heat and light from every living sacrifice here this evening. Are you okay with that? We need to be. A lot of church strife is because we're not okay with that. We're not okay with that. We want to be sure nobody's light is bigger than mine. Totally lost the whole purpose. Now, keep in mind, I told you, I beseech you by the mercies of God. What does 1 Corinthians chapter 13 say? If I give my body to be burned and have not what? Charity, it profiteth me nothing. And so I can be a living sacrifice, but if I don't have love, it's not real. All right? So what's love tonight? You know, too many times, our definition of love is that we have this warm, fuzzy feeling towards somebody. What happens when that person disagrees with you and you lose the warm, fuzzy feeling? Did you lose your love for them? And what happens is, when we have that definition of love, we start to write that person off. I want to give you a definition of love this evening. Love is discovering what is another's good and then doing it. All right? What do you think about that? For God so loved, and he did what? Gave his only begotten Son. So God is in heaven looking down upon his creation. And he says, what do these people need? They need a Savior. So what's he going to do about it? He gave his Son. Love in all relationships come into that very context. Love is the ability to discover what is another's good and then doing it. You know what happens too many times, brethren, with our companions? We don't take the time to discover what is their best good. You say, well, I'll buy them some flowers. They don't want flowers. They just want you to pick up your dirty socks off the floor. Okay? But somehow we think, oh, they'll appreciate this. And then we wonder why it didn't work. You didn't take time to discover what they really, really wanted. Okay? Too many times that happens in church life. We don't take the time to discover what is for the best interest of the other person. And I've given this illustration, and God bless the people who blessed me. We went on a vacation one time, a trip for a couple days. Our porch railing was deteriorating. And I had in mind to sometime take the porch away, move the door down, do a split level on the inside of the house. I hadn't got to it yet. We came back, and somebody blessed us with brand new porch and stair rail. Expensive, I don't know. $2,000-$3,000. It was aluminum, brand spanking new. And I went, now what do I do? No. I was thankful. But it really wasn't in my plans to keep the porch there where you have to climb up these steps and stand there in the wind to get the front door open to get into the house. I wanted to do it on the level. Sometimes what we think is a blessing to people may actually be not quite be that. You know what happens? We don't communicate enough, do we? And it was my fault, too. I guess I could have made an announcement at church. Folks, I'm going to change my porch. So if you have any ideas, don't, please, give me a chance. Communication goes a long way in the ability to discover what is the best interest of another person, all right? I'd like to inspire you to that, especially in our homes. Take the time. What is it that my wife really wants? What is it that your husband really wants? Just don't do nice things. And when you discover what that is, then do it. Don't sit back and say, well, maybe sometime. God is the perfect example of love. Even while we were yet sinners, he sent his son to take care of the problem. He knew what the problem was, and he did something about it. That's love tonight. So, if I'm going to be this kind of a living sacrifice tonight, it has to be done because I am interested in discovering what is the good of others. And then I pour my whole being and my whole self into that project. Now, holy, acceptable unto God. What is the motive behind that living sacrifice? It has to be holiness. It can't be self-serving. It has to be holiness, and it has to be acceptable before God. Now, verse 2. Be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your minds. It comes back to what Brother Leo brought in the devotional this evening. How do we process the information in our minds? First thing we do when we say, be not conformed to this world, we start thinking about clothes. That's not where it starts. It starts with how do you process? What is the world tonight? What do you call world? I remember sitting in a ministry meeting one time and they were saying, well, we need more teaching on nonconformity. And I'm thinking, there isn't a person in any of our churches that look like the world. There's nobody sitting there with tattoos on, earrings in their nose and in their tongue. And what are we calling the world? Probably the focus needed to be, how do we learn to conform to one another? Was probably the focus rather than conforming to the world. How do we process the knowledge that comes to our minds? That's what he's talking about. Transformation of the mind. Transformation of how I process what I see, what I hear, and what I do. That's nonconformity. So I see something that's attractive to me. What do I do with it? Well, the transformed mind says, is this for the purpose of exalting me? Or can I use this to benefit others? And I make a decision based on that. John says, let me read these verses to you quick. Thought I had it marked here. Love not the world. It's our view of what is worldly. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. The world passeth away, and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. So, transformation of the mind causes me to start to look at everything in light of what is God's will for my life. God's will for your life, my life. And I start to process everything in life in that way. It's going to make a difference where we come out. What is God's will for my life? Brother recently shared about Elijah and Elisha. Elijah came and he found Elisha plowing with, you know how many yoke of oxen? 12 yoke of oxen. That's a 12-bottom plow. in today's language, right? He was no small-time farmer. Elisha was a big-time farmer, and what did he do with one of his yoke of oxen? He slew it, and he took the meat, and he fed his family and his friends before he parted from his farming operation. Now, how long would those of you who have assets here, if you took 1/12 of your assets, how long would you be eating? And how many people could you feed? But it says that Elisha left there and went to Gilgal. And Elijah says, stay here. Elisha says, no, I'm not going to stay here. I'm going with you. They go to Bethel. Elisha says, stay here. Now, Bethel is what? House of God, right? Elijah says, stay here at Bethel. And Elisha says, I'm not going to do that. But you know, we have a lot of people today who are just willing to stay at the house of God and then start to accumulate. Let's start piling it up, folks. We go out and we get 14 yoke of oxen, or we go out and we get 20 yoke of oxen, and we do it big. Do you know where they went from Bethel? They went to Jericho. What happened to Jericho? That's where the walls fell down, wasn't it? The demonstration of the power of God. It's all right to come to the house of God, but we have to finally move on from the house of God to seeing the works of God. The falling down of the walls of Jericho was the power of God at work. And Elijah tells Elisha, you stay here. And Elisha says, I'm not doing that. I'm going with you all the way to Jordan. And he went to Jordan, and there is where he received a double portion of Elijah's spirit. Where have you stopped with God? Are you just kind of resting in the house of God saying, well, here's where I stop. And I'm going to heap it up. And I'm going to share my blessings with other people. And forget to move on with God and see the mighty workings of God. And then finally, to continue on with God to where you receive a double portion of the Spirit of God upon your life. And there was great things that Elisha accomplished, more so than Elijah. Ever wonder why the church is so powerless? Ever wonder why? We're okay with people just staying at the house of God. And we're okay with them sitting there and just making money. Don't get me wrong tonight. I don't believe in the doctrine of non-accumulation. Don't believe in that. God has blessed some with the ability to accumulate, but he's also placed a great responsibility on those people, and that is to be ready to distribute. That doesn't mean to distribute it to the church and let them distribute it. That means personal distribution. You know why? The man who has the ability to accumulate also has the ability to know if he's going to hurt somebody by helping them with their funds. A committee doesn't know that. A committee will ruin people through distribution. That's why he says, charge them that are rich in this world that they are ready to distribute. Take personal, if you have assets tonight that you can share with others, you take the personal responsibility to be looking for that Lazarus that's at your doorstep. And God will send them. And you do something about it. Don't take the easy way out and say, well, I'll give it to the church and let them try to figure it out. And I'm not trying to kill your offerings here, brother. I'm just saying, there's a place where there's collective sharing, but there's a place that goes beyond the collective sharing, where there's personal responsibility. If God has blessed you, then take that blessing and be willing to share with those about you. It's a difference in how we process the information that comes into our mind. Are we here in America to be among the rich and famous? I remember meeting a Russian Baptist man, I guess it was. And he said, how do the Mennonites keep their young people? He said, Our people come across the water to America, and they watch television, and they see all the rich and famous. They want to be like them. I didn't tell him that in Mennonite circles, they just watch the rich and famous in the Mennonite circles and want to be like them. I didn't tell him that. But let's beware. We're just as worldly by exalting those who have at the expense of those that don't have. Do we understand equality? That doesn't mean everybody's going to have equal amounts. It just simply means that everybody is a living sacrifice. Everybody's a living sacrifice. Everybody is here to make a contribution in the way God has planned that they should make that contribution. And we're okay with that. We're okay that some people have more than others. But we never exalt the man who has more higher than the man who does not. Lazarus and the rich man are equals. And somewhere we need to be projecting that to each other. What does God expect of you tonight? God expects you to be a living sacrifice, touching people's lives, lighting candles in other people's lives through His power and through His word, creating a warmth and a place for others to come and feel the love of God, personally and collectively. And when that can happen collectively, there is a power source that goes forth from a congregation that can't be stopped, no matter who criticizes, or no matter what they say. So if I can just give you that vision tonight to be this instead of this, all right? Real, live, living sacrifices. Let us kneel for prayer. Our Father in heaven, we're thankful tonight for your mercy that has made it possible that we can come here to look at your word, to understand your greatness that far exceeds us in our smallness, and that because of your mercies, we're not consumed. Father, just open our eyes that we might see those opportunities tomorrow and today, that you lay at our doorsteps, that whatever gifts you may have given to each person here tonight, they might take that gift and they might use it for your honor and glory, that they might become a living sacrifice, Father, a flame setting on fire other people, that there might be a light and a heat going forth from the lives of every person here that would draw men to you, Father. And Father, when we have finally been expended, that you might receive us into glory as your sons and daughters. In Jesus' name, amen.